Welcome back to On the Case, the podcast. I'm Paula Zahn, and thanks for joining us for Pod 35, River of Sadness. Tonight, we're on the case in Yakima, Washington, about 2 hours southeast of Seattle. The sprawling farming community, known for its fruit and wine, became the backdrop for a disturbing murder investigation when a young woman was discovered beaten and drowned. As detectives began their search for her vicious killer, they never could have imagined the lengths they would go to ultimately find justice. June 13th, 1993. It was supposed to be just another Sunday canoe trip for Steve Emhoff and his group of Boy Scouts.
Everybody was kind of talking and joking and just kind of warming up for the day.
But the laid-back summer afternoon on the Yakima River took a dark turn when Steve's 13-year-old son noticed something strange in the water.
My son looked over to the left and said, "Dad, there's a plastic doll over there."
Steve looked where his son was pointing and knew right away it was not a doll. It was a young woman.
She wasn't wearing anything. The body had floated up against a rock and it was just kind of swaying with the current.
Steve sent the boys to the shore, while he and the other adult on the trip, a doctor, took a closer look.
The doctor and I went up to the body, and he noted that he thought maybe she had a broken neck, and he mentioned that she hadn't been dead very long. Still had goosebumps.
The two men decided to pull the body out of the water and place it in the canoe.
We were afraid that the current would take it on down. So we made the decision to put it in the doctor's canoe, and we took it over to the edge of the river.
Within minutes, Yakima police arrived at the scene. Detectives were stunned by the brutality of the crime. Lieutenant Nolan Wentz.
This was very violent. There was an injury to her head that I won't forget. It was an actual open fracture. I could see right down into her head. It was a horrendous situation, and especially to happen to a person as young as she was.
Based on her injuries, it was apparent that the victim had been assaulted and then thrown into the water. Detective Joe Scherschlicht.
You could see where she had been dragged through the brush or the rocks to get her to the river.
She had bruising all around her chin, on her arms. She was just beat really bad before she ended up being killed.
The number of defensive wounds on her body suggested she had struggled to stay alive.
I think she tried to get away, run, and fell. That's where some of these bruises came from. I think she put up a pretty good fight.
Lieutenant Nolan Wentz was outraged by the overkill.
This was something no one should ever have to experience, period. When I see someone injured like this, it angers me.
Due to the nature of her serious injuries, even seasoned officers took the case personally.
She unfortunately suffered a violent death. It bothered me a lot that she suffered like that.
Detectives tried to keep their emotions in check while they looked for a clue that might help them identify the young woman.
We brought every officer we could find, and we're unable to find anything to identify her.
Since the young woman was found naked, detectives theorized the attack had been sexually motivated.
Anytime you find a woman without clothing, that's going to be your first conclusion. And it was confirmed later on during the medical examination.
Investigators combed the riverbanks for evidence.
I'm thinking, where are her clothes? There's got to be a scene somewhere. I needed some idea of where she had gone into the water.
We searched about 5 miles of the Yakima River. Unable to find anything that could tell us what happened to this young girl.
While detectives processed the area, the medical examiner tried to piece together the terrifying final moments of the young woman's life.
There was evidence of drowning. She was still physically alive at the time she went into the water, and the water is what finished her off.
Police believe that the killer had thrown the young woman into the river to destroy any evidence that might identify him.
I believe the killer put her body in the water for one of two reasons: to conceal her from being found and to destroy the evidence that would be found with her. Water is the medium that you would use to get rid of evidence.
But the plan backfired when her body was discovered so quickly.
In this case, the victim's body was not in the water long enough.
Remarkably, the medical examiner was able to retrieve critical biological evidence.
So I knew that she had had sexual contact with somebody.
The investigation got another break when Detective Wentz overheard a call coming in on the radio. A young man had just reported his 21-year-old girlfriend missing. The description he provided police appeared to match the young woman found in the river.
The first thing I said is, go get him right now. I suspected the person making this report was going to identify who we are dealing with.
Detective Joe Scherschlicht was the first one to speak with the young man. His name was Travis Sinden. He claimed that his girlfriend, Shauna Yandell, had disappeared under mysterious circumstances the night before.
She was missing from Sportsman's Park, which is right on the river.
When Travis handed the officer a picture of his missing girlfriend, it confirmed the detective's suspicions. The deceased female found in the river was Travis's girlfriend, Shauna Yandell. She was just 21 years old. But detectives didn't reveal that Shauna had already been found. They wanted to hear what Travis had to say before telling him anything.
I wanted to get him tied down on statements. If he chose to change the story later, we would have him locked in and possibly catch him in a lie.
Travis told police he had last seen Shauna around 1 a.m. before he passed out drunk in one of the park's restrooms. He claimed that when he woke up several hours later, she was gone.
He told me he then searched the park for her, was calling her name, could not locate her. And after some time doing this, he started to walk back to his uncle's house.
As investigators listened to the young man's emotional story, they wondered if he would soon be confessing to the gruesome murder. Meanwhile, detectives had the grim task of informing Shauna's family about her tragic death. Shauna's sister, Shannon, was hundreds of miles away in Texas when she got word of the heartbreaking crime.
I remember the phone ringing, and I pretty much just collapsed on the floor right there and just cried the rest of the evening.
Just 18 months apart, Shannon and her younger sister, Shauna, had been inseparable while growing up in Arkansas.
She was very intelligent. You never could outsmart her. She was always two steps ahead of everybody else. And she could make the meanest biscuits and gravy.
Shauna was visiting Yakima during a cross-country trip with her boyfriend, Travis.
She just wanted to see more than Arkansas. They were just going to earn enough money, you know, picking apples.
Travis had arranged for them to stay with his relatives, the Wilkies, while they were in town. Since they had only been in Washington just a few weeks when Shauna fell victim to the savage attack, police had to consider a disturbing possibility. That Travis, the young man who was now reporting her missing, was also the person who killed her.
I asked Travis if he would take me out to the scene where he last saw Shauna.
Detectives still hadn't told Travis that they knew Shauna had been murdered. They carefully watched his every move as he walked them through the hours just before Shauna disappeared.
There were a few things going through my mind. His behavior, his attitude, if he's nervous, how long he takes to answer questions, and any discrepancies in the statements that he makes.
Travis said that he and Shauna were dropped off at the park around 8:30 that night after a long day of job hunting with another couple. Travis admitted he was already drunk when they got there. When police asked Travis why he and Shauna had decided to go to the park, he explained it was a place where they both enjoyed hanging out.
He said Shauna liked that area, and they would go up right next to the river.
But as detectives listened to Travis's story, it sounded like he was insistent on staying at the park. Shauna was cold and had repeatedly asked him to take her home.
That was a possible motive for him to do this. Maybe he became angry in a fit of rage. They got in an argument and he killed her.
By midnight, the temperature had dropped, and Travis said he finally called the Wilkies to ask for a ride home. But they told the intoxicated 25-year-old that he and Shauna could walk back.
They said, "Now you've made it there on your own. You can make it home."
Travis said making that call is the last thing he remembered before passing out.
He originally could not remember a lot of details, and that is suspicious to me because he conveniently can have an excuse of, "I blacked out."
When he woke up several hours later in the park bathroom, Shauna was gone. On the Case, the podcast will continue in a moment. Travis told police he walked to the Wilkies' house expecting to find Shauna there waiting for him. But she had never made it back. But it wasn't until nearly 12 hours later that he called police to report her missing. Detective Joe Scherschlicht.
I just thought that was a long time, if he was that concerned about her. When I questioned about that, he stated he didn't really know what to do.
More than 20 years later, the intense interrogation with detectives remains etched in Travis Sinden's memory, while the details of his last moments with Shauna are still foggy.
I don't remember a whole lot. I was probably drinking more than what I should have.
During the interrogation, Travis repeatedly told police the last thing he remembered was talking with Shauna in the bathroom.
We was cold, so we'd go in, warm up, and that's when I passed out, blacked out, and when I came to, she was gone. I was thinking maybe she tried to walk home on her own, so I followed the route that we took to go home from there.
Travis said that the walk back to his relative's home was about a mile. When he got to the Wilkies' home, there was no sign of Shauna. Travis claimed he was worried about her, but he thought she'd eventually turn up, so he fell back asleep.
I was just hoping she'd show up.
Travis still has no explanation for why he waited so long to contact the police after he realized Shauna hadn't made it back.
When I came to the next day, I guess it was around noon, I called the police. And about 2 or 3 hours later, they took me downtown.
But detectives didn't buy Travis's story. And they wanted to carefully gauge his response when they revealed the truth about Shauna's murder.
We decided to advise Travis at that time that we had recovered a body from the river.
Travis appeared to be devastated by the news.
He seemed very upset, and we asked if he would be willing to come and identify her for us, and he stated that he would.
They took me down to the morgue to see her body, and they unzipped the bag, and I could see bruises all over her body. I couldn't believe it was her. It was horrible.
Identifying Shauna's body had left Travis visibly shaken. But investigators wondered if it was grief or guilt that he was feeling.
He became very quiet, and he started crying a little bit, and then he mumbled to himself, "This is my fault. This is my fault."
But when pressed if he was responsible for Shauna's death, he was adamant that he was innocent.
I didn't have nothing to do with it.
Detectives sensed that Travis still wasn't telling them everything he knew.
I did ask Travis if he would be willing to take a polygraph, and he immediately stated yes.
During the exam, police once again studied Travis closely, looking for evidence that he had been in a struggle. Lieutenant Nolan Wentz.
Shauna had attempted to fight back. So you would expect to find scratches, something, to indicate that they were involved in a fight, but there was nothing.
I remember looking at his hands, and I do not recall seeing anything that would indicate that he had been in a struggle.
Investigators also noted that the area where Shauna's body had been found was miles away from where she was last seen with Travis.
He didn't have a way to transport her upstream, and that weighed heavily in his favor. He didn't have a way to move her.
The polygraph test confirmed that Travis Sinden was telling the truth.
We run him on the polygraph, and he passed.
I did not think he was involved with the murder.
After Travis was cleared as a suspect, he was able to express the pain he felt over losing the woman he loved.
She was a wonderful person. I was planning on marrying her, maybe had some kids. She was the one.
Shauna's sister Shannon was relieved but not surprised that Travis was ruled out as a suspect.
My sister would not be with somebody who had a main bone in their body. It wasn't Travis, it was somebody else.
But who? Based on Travis's story, detectives theorized that Shauna had tried to find her way back home to the Wilkie's house by herself after her boyfriend had passed out in the park bathroom.
She'd complained to Travis that she was cold and she wanted to go home.
Police discovered that Shauna had even asked a park ranger for a ride.
He wouldn't do it. He was required to stay on the premise at the time.
The employee stated I can't do that, you just need to leave now, because the park was closed.
Investigators asked Travis if there was someone else who might have given Shauna a ride. And suddenly, Travis remembered that it had been his friend, Kenny Madden, who dropped them off at the park that night.
I was just running that through my mind, if maybe he had something to do with it.
Had he gone back to the park or picked her up someplace on the road?
And the theory gained traction when Travis mentioned that Kenny had been flirting with Shauna all afternoon.
This flirting upset Travis. Some words were exchanged, and at one time, they were going to step out of the car and fight it out.
Travis revealed that it would not have been the first time the two had fought over a woman.
Me and him had prior issues when we were younger. I used to date one of his ex-girlfriends, and he didn't like that too much.
The fact that there was a history of problems between Travis and Kenny Madden intrigued police. Detectives speculated that Kenny may have seen Shauna's vulnerability that night as an opportunity for revenge against Travis.
We felt that there was possible motive to harm Shauna.
26-year-old Kenny Madden was no stranger to police. In fact, Lieutenant Wentz had arrested him before for burglary.
I had known Kenny for quite a while.
When police spoke with Madden, he denied having seen Travis and Shauna after dropping them off at the park that night. He claimed that he had spent a quiet night at home with his girlfriend. But when investigators searched Madden's car and found Shauna's coat in the trunk, they believed his entire story was a lie.
Why was the coat in there, was the question.
Madden's explanation raised even more red flags.
He said it was warm, so it wasn't needed. She left it behind.
Even though it seemed much more likely to investigators that Shauna's coat had been left there after an attack, forensic testing of his car and a polygraph exam backed up Madden's account.
He and his girlfriend had told me where they had gone after dropping Shauna and Travis off. I was able to track down all the people. They confirmed Kenny's story.
With Kenny Madden officially cleared as a suspect, detectives launched a massive effort to find an eyewitness.
There were 39 campsites that were full that night, so we tracked down all of them.
But no one had seen Shauna leaving the park that night.
I found no one that can tell me that they saw her leave.
But Shauna had left the park that night. The question was, how and with whom?
The killer deposited the body into the water about 2 miles upstream from where she was last seen.
The remote location led detectives to speculate that whoever killed Shauna was someone who was very familiar with the area.
I was pretty certain it was somebody from there. It was off the beaten path.
Investigators on the case believed that someone knew more than they were willing to tell them.
Yakima is not that big of a community. I had expected somebody to say something. Somebody saw something, and they just weren't saying.
Investigators went to the home where Travis and Shauna had been staying and interviewed the Wilkies. During the conversation, one of the couple's nephews, Brian Wilkie, interrupted them with several nasty remarks about Shauna.
He said, "That's what she gets for being there." And I thought, this is not the kind of a comment I would expect someone to say of someone who was just murdered.
But Brian's fury over the investigators' request to search the Wilkies' car seemed even more suspicious.
Brian was adamant and somewhat belligerent of the fact that we were going to search the car. That brought up red flags. Why don't you want us to search the car?
When detectives opened the trunk, the reason suddenly seemed very clear. Inside was a blood-stained tire iron that had what appeared to be a woman's hair stuck to it.
First thing I thought is this matches that head wound I saw when we first found Shauna's body.
There was a long strand of red hair. Shauna had long red hair.
I'm thinking, wow, we're getting somewhere now, because this is physical evidence.
I immediately thought, there's the murder weapon.
More on The Case, the podcast, after this. Police believe they had found Shauna's killer, especially when they learned that Brian had access to the car on the night of the murder and could have heard the phone call from Travis to his uncle asking for a ride. Detective Joe Scherschlicht.
He would have been aware of the information that Shauna and Travis were at Sportsman State Park. He could have easily taken the car, driven over there, and found Shauna.
There was no doubt in investigators' minds that Shauna would have gotten into the car if she saw Brian behind the wheel. She knew the 22-year-old, and he could have offered her a warm ride home. Detectives felt they were getting closer to solving one of the most disturbing murder cases in Yakima's history. Just moments after investigators uncovered the new evidence, the tire iron was raced to the state crime lab. Lieutenant Nolan Wentz.
The detective was given marching orders to get that straight to the lab immediately, and he drove it over there before they closed.
Detectives believed that the testing would move them closer to arresting their new suspect, Brian Wilkie.
My hopes were pretty high that this could be him.
But the results were not what they had expected. The hair found on the tire iron did not belong to Shauna.
Physical evidence doesn't lie.
The results were negative. It was not Shauna's hair. It was not human blood. The tire iron was not the murder weapon.
With no other evidence linking Brian Wilkie to Shauna's murder, police cleared him of any role in the crime.
There wasn't any real reason to pursue him any further.
It was extremely frustrating. We were back at square one as trying to locate suspects.
Once again, investigators decided to look at the possibility that Shauna had crossed paths with her killer as she tried to make her way back to the Wilkies on foot.
If she was walking home, we were thinking maybe that she had been picked up by somebody, but we didn't have any real leads or anything to tell us exactly what happened.
Detectives identified a small tavern along the route as the most likely place that Shauna might have encountered a stranger.
There was a bar down on the Yakima River then. It's called the Poorhouse. I went in and talked to the people there.
But no one had seen Shauna that night.
People we contacted had no recollection of Shauna being there.
Despite all the setbacks, Detective Wentz refused to give up. Then, in 1995, the detective heard about a convicted serial killer named Keith Jesperson, otherwise known as the Happy Face Killer, Jesperson got his disturbing nickname from the happy faces he would draw on the letters that he sent to the media where he boasted about his murders. But it was a specific detail about Jesperson that caught the detective's attention.
He is from Selah. Selah is another town that's just right next to Yakima. He knows the area.
If Jesperson was in Yakima during the time when Shauna was killed, there was no doubt that he was capable.
Jesperson was a truck driver. There is a big truck stop almost directly in line with the state park if Shauna walked home.
But police had to be sure. By this time, improvements in technology made DNA analysis a viable tool in crime investigations. Detectives wasted no time. They had a forensic lab compare Jesperson's DNA to the evidence from Shauna's case. When the results came back, Jesperson was not a match.
It's not him, so he was done. There wasn't any real reason to pursue him any further.
It was another blow to the investigation, but Lieutenant Wentz refused to give up. For years, he chased every lead that crossed his desk. Solving this case before he retired became his personal mission.
It offends me that someone can do this, and it really offends me at the possibility of somebody getting away with it.
Investigators knew that as long as Shauna's killer was on the loose, no one in the community was safe.
My biggest concern was that there are going to be other victims out there. This wasn't his first time. I didn't think it was going to be his last time.
And that same thought plagued Shauna's sister.
I was afraid that he was out there hurting somebody else. The thought of somebody like that running around is just unnerving.
But despite her frustration and fear, Shannon found the strength to keep moving forward.
I did a whole lot of praying. I just had to keep doing what we do in the South. You get up, you put your lipstick on, you put your earrings on, and you go through another day.
Then, 16 long years after Shauna's murder, the Yakima Police Department got funding that allowed new DNA testing to be done on its oldest unsolved cases. Shauna's murder was one of the first to be reviewed. Forensic lab supervisor Kristen Drury.
We had evidence in the case that had been initially analyzed, but due to new changes in forensic science, I felt should be reanalyzed with the newer technology.
Like everyone in Yakima's law enforcement community, Kristen Drury knew that Lieutenant Wentz had made solving Shauna's case the final goal of his long career. So when she got a hit on the DNA evidence, she couldn't wait to share the news.
I was very shocked. I called Lieutenant Wentz right away, and I informed him that I had him one step closer to retirement.
When Lieutenant Wentz got the news about a DNA hit on the evidence from Shauna Yandell's murder, it was a revelation.
It was huge. It was almost like as if the skies parted, the sun shone through, everything gets new life. I was reborn again in this.
A case he feared might never be solved had a brand new prime suspect. His name, Clayton Gene Stafford. But the detective had no idea who he was.
I had never heard of this person. Who is this guy? So at that point, it now becomes our goal to find out everything I can about him and find out where he's at. And we started researching.
A background check revealed that 56-year-old Clayton Stafford was a career felon with a history of violence against women.
Women, to him, were nothing more than an object that he could do whatever he wanted to with, and often did. It made no difference whether it was somebody he knew or someone he had just met.
Despite a long criminal record, Stafford's DNA had only recently been entered into the national database following an arrest in California.
In 2005, it was collected in San Bernardino County on a hit and run. It wasn't in the Washington State system.
As Lieutenant Wentz began to build his case against Stafford, he discovered that the former landscaper was no stranger to the park where Shauna had last been seen.
He grew up there. He knew that area intimately. In fact, the house he had grown up in was right across the street.
Stafford was out of prison and living in Yakima when Wentz knocked on his front door to confront him. Lieutenant Wentz recalls their first face-to-face encounter.
Hey, I need to talk to you a little bit about an old case. Well, what's this about? I said, well, I'll explain everything to you once we get downtown.
At first, Stafford was calm and cooperative. But once he got into the patrol car, his demeanor suddenly changed.
He immediately starts puffing and sounding like he's going to have a heart attack.
Wentz believed that that was a sign of guilt and rushed to the station to try to get a confession.
I told him we have to record everything immediately.
Back in 1993, June 13th to be exact, a group of Boy Scouts in a canoe trip down the Yakima River found the body of a 21-year-old woman. Now, you're from Yakima.
Right, yeah.
So I asked him if he knew Shauna Yandell. Did not know who that was. You're sure? Absolutely. Don't know who you're talking about.
You have become the person of interest as far as Shauna Yandell, who is the young lady we found in the river.
No, that's bull crap. I know nothing about it.
Okay.
I don't know the name or the person or...
Never heard of that person at all?
Not that I can remember.
Armed with the DNA match, Lieutenant knew Stafford's denials of meeting Shauna Yandell only strengthened his case.
I had what I needed. Thank you very much.
On the Case, the podcast will continue in a moment. Lieutenant Wentz had heard enough. He decided to confront him with the evidence.
I started getting into the DNA. I said, you understand what DNA is? He said, yeah, I know. I says, okay, and we have your DNA with my victim.
Shauna Yandell was sexually assaulted before she was murdered. That DNA was you.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
No, it wasn't.
He's all, you don't have that. Yes, we do. And no matter what you're going to tell me, I know.
But Stafford maintained his innocence during the entire interrogation. And the questioning came to a halt when he asked for a lawyer.
Looks like you're serious about your so I guess it's time for me to get serious about it. You're trying to stick me with something here, so I need to see an attorney.
Detective Wentz placed Clayton Stafford under arrest. He was charged with the first-degree murder of Shauna Yandell. Prosecutor Patty Powers was certain she had a strong case against Stafford.
This was an outstanding investigation. Detective Wentz was assigned to this investigation in 1993. He never gave up.
Wentz felt a sense of relief when he was finally able to share the news with Shauna's long-suffering family. Shauna's sister, Shannon, remembers the phone call that came 16 years after her sister's murder.
Detective Wentz said, we've got him. We got the guy. And I couldn't believe it. My heart was just jumping. My stomach was churning. I just couldn't believe that it was finally over. I was thrilled.
Even though they had enough evidence to arrest Stafford, investigators knew there was still a lot of work to be done to get a conviction.
Shauna was no longer able to speak. We worked to make sure that we were doing everything that we could to bring the reality of this crime to a jury and that they would see that the defendant was responsible for this very brutal murder.
For Shauna's boyfriend, Travis Sinden, it was a chance to finally put the worst days of his life behind him. But first, he had to face Stafford in court.
It was kind of hard to look at him. I wanted to choke him or beat him up or something.
Travis, he testified that Shauna was someone who meant a lot to him, that they had plans to remain together, to be married. It took courage to go back and talk about a situation that unfolded in a very tragic manner that he was not able to prevent or to stop.
The prosecution laid out a theory of Shauna's final moments alive.
We know that Shauna was cold and tired and that she wanted to go home. There's no question whatsoever that she was vulnerable.
I think Shauna wanted to get back to the Wilkies, get into a place that was warm and go to sleep. I think she walked down the road. I think she encountered Clayton Stafford coming out of the Poorhouse Tavern.
The prosecution theorized that Shauna had been at the wrong place at the wrong time when she ran into the career criminal.
It was a crime of opportunity committed by a person who was a stranger to the victim.
I think she ended up being attacked by him. And he realized I needed to get rid of her, and he drove to that location upstream.
He had lived in that area. Living in the area would certainly give you an opportunity to know the terrain and to be familiar with it.
During the trial, Stafford's defense team tried to explain away the DNA by saying that Shauna had consensual sex with Stafford on the night of her murder, an argument that contradicted Stafford's original statements, where he claimed he had never even met her.
He wanted to say that he'd had consensual sex with her. I knew that was absolutely ridiculous.
His attorney is able to argue any reasonable inferences from the evidence, but her time in Yakima County was very brief, and she did not know the defendant until the last moments of her life.
After hearing all of the evidence, it took the jury less than 2 days to find Clayton Stafford guilty of first-degree murder.
As soon as I heard the word, my heart just about jumped out of my chest. I'm looking at Patty, and she's looking at me. And we realized that all of the work that we have done had just culminated in exactly the way it should be.
Shauna's sister made a passionate victim's impact statement by way of webcam.
This was my sister. You took her away from me. You took her away from the family and the memories that we all could have shared. Where you're going, you're gonna encounter some really bad people. And I hope you get everything you deserve.
Shannon wanted Stafford to know just how universally loved Shauna was and how his heinous crime had destroyed what would have been a bright future for her and her loved ones.
He cheated us. My daughter will never get to meet her Aunt Shauna. I was robbed. I wanted him to know that he took a whole lot away from us.
Even after his sentencing, Clayton Stafford
continued his denials.
My name is Clayton Stafford, and I did not commit murder. I didn't kill your sister.
For him to sit there right in front of us and still say that I did not kill your sister, you cannot deny the DNA.
Lieutenant Wentz firmly believes that Stafford has no conscience.
I always got the impression he believed that he was smarter than everybody else and he could just do whatever he pleased. He was the most vile individual I have ever met.
And while Stafford will spend the rest of his life behind bars, Shauna's family will spend the rest of theirs wondering what might have been.
She would have been strong, compassionate, very, very, very caring, and she would be amazingly intelligent. And I just think if she had been alive, everybody would know who she is for a different reason.
Shauna's sister says if there's one lesson to learn from her family's tragic story, it's to never take your loved ones for granted.
Know that you might not have one more day with that person. So be kind and love them and put all those little petty problems aside and love your family.
After Clayton Stafford's conviction, detectives looked at the possibility he had committed other violent crimes in the 16 years after Shauna's death. But they were never able to find evidence that connected him to another murder. Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to follow, rate, and review. And if you want more information on today's case, visit facebook.com/paulazanofficial or just click the link in the episode description. I'm Paula Zahn. Please join us again next Wednesday when we're back on the case, the podcast.